Okay, so we were talking about memory management, new topic. Okay, so last time we talked about what are called contiguous memory allocation schemes. These are schemes that take an entire process and store the address space of this process contiguously in memory. Okay, the whole process is at one chunk of RAM. Picture is shown here. Okay, there are three processes A, B, and C. Each is occupying a contiguous region of RAM. The gray areas are what are called holes. Those are free regions in memory. Okay, regions in memory that are not in use. Okay, we looked at a simple technique called uniprogramming, which only runs or loads one process at any given time. Okay, then we looked at two different schemes, one called static relocation, one called dynamic relocation. Okay, in static relocation, what happens is the compiler generates your binary code assuming the process starts at memory address 0. Okay, because the compiler doesn't know where the OS is going to load your process when you are compiling your code. So it just assumes that your code will be loaded at address 0, but in reality it may actually be resident somewhere else. So process C starts at address 1100. So what you do is you basically go and look at the machine code and then offset every memory address you see in an assembly instruction by the start address. Okay, you add that to the start address, so then basically that actually generates a physical address. In dynamic relocation, you don't do that at load time, rather you do that at run time or execution time. You basically fetch an instruction to execute. The instruction actually has a virtual address. Okay, the address assumes that the process has been loaded at location 0. So what you do is you take that virtual address and you add the base address, which is the start address, and that gives you the actual physical address that the instruction is actually referring to. Okay, so that is basically called dynamic relocation. We looked at advantages and disadvantages of static and dynamic, and then we were talking about allocation schemes. Okay, that basically we looked at first fit, best fit, and worst fit. These are techniques that allow you to allocate a region of memory to a new process that is coming in. Process comes in, says I need so much RAM. You basically look at the empty regions in memory and allocate a chunk from that. Depending on how you do that, you get a technique called first fit, which takes the first available thing in your list and allocates it. Best fit, which tries to do the best match, and worst fit, that takes the largest hole and allocates it. Okay, so those are three techniques that you need to know. Okay, which, and then the problem that all of this technique result in is called what?
Fragmentation.
It's called fragmentation. Yes, fragmentation is defined as a scenario it's a scenario where there is sufficient free memory in total, but there is no single hole that is big enough to hold a new incoming process. Okay, there are lots of little holes. You add up the sizes of these holes together, you have enough memory to allocate to a new process, but there is no one contiguous chunk that is big enough. Okay, and you address fragmentation by doing defragment or compaction, where you move the processes. So here you can reclaim this region of memory by moving B, C up, so that leaves one big hole at the bottom. That's the process is called compaction. Same kind of stuff that happens on a disk. Disks also get fragmented in the same way and can be defragmented. Okay, so today we are going to look at a new technique. Okay, so now we are going to take a step back and say contiguous memory, contiguous allocation of memory is not good because it results in fragmentation. So we are going to look at techniques that overcome this problem of fragmentation. This happens to be a major issue in memory management. So we just want to design schemes that don't have fragmentation at all. Okay, so we need to relax some of our assumptions to eliminate fragmentation. Question is, what could we do? We are going to look at a scheme called paging. Okay? But before we go into the details of the scheme, let's try to understand fundamentally why fragmentation occurs and what would we do to eliminate it. Okay, so think about the first fit or the best fit, where we said we have lots of little holes, but no hole is big enough to hold a process. How would we take the process and fit it into memory if you don't want to then defragment everywhere? What could we do? What assumptions would we want to relax? Memory should be contiguous. Okay, you can, and you have something to say. So you are saying you have pointers from one region to another. Okay. So basically the suggestion that is being made is, or fundamentally what we are, the assumption we are trying to relax is that the process shouldn't be loaded contiguously. Okay? We can if you are allowed to chop up the process into smaller pieces and put different pieces in different locations, then fundamentally we can get rid of fragmentation. Okay, the problem arose because we did have enough memory, we didn't have one contiguous chunk. And the way you address this is, why store the process in one contiguous chunk? Why not chop it up into smaller pieces and store them in lots of little chunks? Okay? So if you do that, then you will get rid of this problem of fragmentation. You don't need to do compaction. Okay? Paging is essentially that scheme. That essentially does that. What paging does is, it takes memory and it chops it up into small chunks called pages. A page could be a 4 kilobyte chunk or a 1 kilobyte chunk. And you hand out memory to processes in units of pages. Okay, so you can, a process can come and request memory in as some integral number of pages. Okay, and the assumption we are relaxing is, the process doesn't need to be contiguous. Okay, we can basically, if a process needs 10 pages, we can take 10 pages from arbitrary locations and assign it to the process, and things should still work fine. Okay, and how to make it work fine, we will look at in just a moment. Okay, so paging divides and assigns processes. So you take a process address space, you chop it up into fixed size pages. Okay, memory is chopped up into fixed size frames. You go and allocate frames to pages. Okay, so you move, and then that's basically your granularity of memory allocation. Okay, so here's the picture. It shows you exactly that. Okay, so this is the same RAM photo picture that I put up last time. There are 2400 bytes. Okay, and there are 12 frames. Okay, so each is a fixed size chunk. This is pages in RAM. Those are pages in a process. Yes, your question.
So frames are necessarily the same size as pages.
In fact, soon we'll stop referring to frames as pages. Just use the term page interchangeably for this chunk of address space and the chunk of the process. But it goes without saying that if the pages and frames are basically of the same size, that's why you're allocating pages to frames in memory. Okay, you have RAM, you chop it up into fixed size frames. You have a process, you chop it up into fixed size pages, and the size of a page and the size of a frame is the same. And what this picture is showing you is that these pages are scattered across RAM. They are no longer contiguous. Okay, the process is no longer going to be resident contiguously. It could be resident anywhere. There's no ordering. Okay, so you can basically, you don't even have a contiguous ordering. So first page is here, second page is here, third page is here, fourth here, and so on. Okay, this is the picture to keep in mind. The important thing that this does for us is it gets rid of fragmentation altogether. Okay, because allocation is always in fixed size frames, and you ask for memory in fixed size frames. If you ask for 10 pages and there are 10 frames, you can always satisfy that request. You will never say it's not contiguous because you don't need to allocate them contiguously. Okay? That's the fundamental thing that has happened because of paging. Now let's look at some other things, and we will, so that's not all. Okay? The paging is actually a much more general scheme. Some other aspects of paging we are going to come back to. Okay? One important aspect of paging is that you don't need to keep the entire process in memory. Okay? I showed you that we don't need to keep the process contiguously, but paging goes one step further. Okay? Paging says you don't even need to keep the whole process in memory at any given time. Okay? And the reason for this is what is called the 90-10 rule. Okay? The 90-10 rule essentially says processes spend 90% of their time accessing 10% of the pages. Okay? So at any given time, if you look at the current set of instructions the process is actually executing and the regions within its address space that it is accessing, you will see that it is actually accessing a very small number of pages right now. Okay? So then you should ask, why should you keep all these other pages that are not being accessed? Okay, all the time. Let's fetch things on demand. Okay, over time, the process will access different pages, but at any given time, it will access a small subset of the pages. So the insight is, don't even keep all of the pages in memory at any time. Only keep what is called the working set of the process. The working set of a process is the pages that it's currently working on. Okay, pages that are currently being read to, written, accessed in some shape or form. Okay? Okay? Just keep the working set. The working set will change over time as you execute different pieces of code from your program. But as your working set changes, take the pages that are in memory, throw them out, and bring new pages into memory. Okay? This is basically what paging does for you. Okay? So there are two things. One is you don't no longer need the process to be contiguous, but you also don't need the process to be resident in memory at all times. Okay? How to do that, we are going to wait on. Okay, today we are only going to look at paging as if the whole process was resident in memory. Okay? But we will come back to paging and then we will look at what's called demand paging, which dynamically brings in pages as needed and then throws out pages when you don't need them. Okay, so that's basically when we talk about virtual memory, we'll come back to the more general version. Today's version of paging is a simplified version. All we are doing is relaxing the contiguous allocation part of paging and say you can put the pages wherever you want, okay, not contiguously. Yes, question.
Can paging be kind of slow because it has to go through the whole process and rewrite all the memory addresses?
Yes, does paging become slow? We are going to exactly look at this problem in two or three slides and what's the performance impact. Okay, we are trying to make the scheme general, but there is no free lunch. Okay, you are going to give up something to get something else. So we'll see what is the performance impact, how can you have some hardware support to mitigate that performance impact. We'll come back to all of that. Okay, so but let's talk a little bit about paging itself. So it says pages need not be contiguously allocated and paging eliminates external fragmentation altogether. Okay, paging does not, however, eliminate internal fragmentation. Okay. So internal fragmentation stays at half, on an average, half page per process. Okay, then the question is, why is there this half, where did this half page per process come from? Or why is there a claim that says paging results in an internal fragmentation of half a page? Yes, you have something? Okay, right. So that's the first observation is a process is not going to exactly be a multiple of the page size. Okay? You write some arbitrary program. Let's say your pages are 4K in size. Okay, you write some arbitrary program. The compiler generates some code. It may be 4,312 bytes. That's not a multiple of 4K. Okay? However, you always allocate memory in granularity of pages. So you can either do 4K or you can do 8K. So this process, when it starts up, will require two pages because it doesn't fit in one page. So you give it two pages, okay? And then you will waste some space in the second page. Okay? So the first thing to realize is processes are not multiples of page sizes. They can be of arbitrary size. But you can only allocate memory as multiples of page sizes. So you will always waste some space in the last page of the process. Okay, because that page you may not use up all of the space, you will waste some space. The question is, how much will you waste on an average? Okay, exactly, you don't know, that depends on the process. But on an average, how much will you waste? All things being equal.
You can use an extra half page on average.
Yeah, on average, all things being equal, some processes may only use 1 byte of the page, some processes may use 1 byte less than 4K, but on an average you waste half a page. Okay, some waste more, some waste less. Okay, this is why internal fragmentation is half a page. That's the amount of memory you are going to waste. Okay. So that's paging. We talked about internal external fragmentation. So now we'll talk about page performance. Okay, so one important issue is how does paging work? Okay, and then what is the performance impact? So first we need to understand how paging is even going to work for us. Okay, this is part where you need to pay a little bit of sort of attention because it's not very trivial. Okay, so because the process is not contiguous in memory, okay, and because the compiler also doesn't know how the process is going to be laid out in memory, it will not be able to generate physical addresses at compile time. Okay? It can make the same old assumption, which is assuming that the process is contiguously laid out and starts at address 0. Okay? That's the only assumption the compiler can make. It doesn't know any better what is going to happen when the process runs. So the compiler will generate virtual addresses assuming the process is contiguously laid out. But in reality, the process is scattered all over RAM. Okay? So these virtual addresses mean nothing. Okay, you have to somehow translate them to actual physical addresses. Okay, and the question is, how are you going to do that? Is the problem clear? We haven't said what the solution is, but the problem should at least be clear. So let me draw a picture here just to make the point clear. So let's say that's a process. Okay, process A. Okay, so let's say it has two pages. Okay, page 0 and page 1. Okay, and let's say it's mapped in this fashion. So that's frame 0, frame 1, frame 2, frame 3. That's page 0, page 1. Okay. Okay, so your page 0 is mapped onto frame 2. Page 1 is mapped onto frame 0. Compiler is going to generate addresses assuming this is contiguously laid out and is starting at location 0. But this is how the page is actually laid out. So now if you have an assembly instruction that says load register R1 some virtual address. Okay, somehow this has to get translated into a physical address. Okay, and the question is, how will we do that? Okay, is that clear what I just said? Problem clear or not? Okay, so what would we do? What could we do to address this problem? Okay, what you would have to have a map. Let's not worry about performance. We'll see how to deal with the performance. Let's come up with a solution, however inefficient it may be. Okay? Yes.
Would you have access, or would you know what the starting point is for each page?
Okay. First question is, would we know the starting point at each page? We'll assume the OS knows everything. The OS knows that this page is here and that because it allocated that. Okay, so you know where the pages are mapped. You know the address starting address of each page because the pages are of fixed size. If these are 4K pages, that's 0, that's 4096, this is 8192, and so on and so forth. So you know the start address of each page, you know where this is mapped onto. All of this is known because OS knows exactly the page size. OS knows where for each process the pages are resident. Yes.
Operating system's internal map to map each logical address to a physical address by saying that, you know, if you're within this memory range, then it needs to go to this page. If you're in this other logical memory range, then it needs to go to this other page.
Okay. So basically, if you know this information, as is being pointed out, you will need to be able to do a little bit of magic to figure out which address maps where to physical, in physical memory. Okay, so we'll assume that the process is contiguous and we'll look at an offset. Okay, the offset here is 0x0, which is the 10th byte of this process. Okay, so then you say, where is the 10th byte stored? First you ask, which page is the 10th byte in? In this case it's in page P0, and you ask, where is page 0 mapped onto? It's mapped onto frame 2. And then you ask, where is the 10th offset within that page? That's the 10th offset within this page. That is 8202. Okay, that's your physical address. So you have to basically do this translation. So for every virtual address, you first need to find which page it resides in the address space. Okay, which page does it reside in here? Then you say, where is that page stored there? And then you basically say, now it is basically in that location. Okay. So essentially, a virtual address is essentially an offset from the start of the process. Okay, so you basically start at 0 and you start counting up. So that's your virtual address. Okay, this is going to be translated into a page number and an offset within the page. Say page P1 offset 10. Okay, so 10th byte of page P1. So that's how you translate this. Okay, then you take the page number and you look at that map. Then you basically translate that to frame number and offsets. Okay, this is the physical address of the page. Okay, we'll see how to do all of that in an example. Okay, but you have to basically do this translation. Take a virtual address. Okay, find the page number and an offset it maps to. take this map, which is called a page table incidentally, and map it to a frame number and an offset. The frame number and an offset actually tells you where in memory is that particular piece of that process. Okay, so that's basically, then let's go through some details here and then we'll look at some examples and do some numerical examples as well. Okay, so we'll assume that the page process generates contiguous virtual addresses from size 0 to the size of the process. Okay, then you basically, OS takes the pages and then finds the page number and an offset. Then you basically, that's the page number offset, you have the page table to keep track of that mapping. Okay, you generate frame number and an offset. So let's go to an example. Okay, so let's actually not go to the example, but let's look at how this is actually going to work and what hardware will we have. Okay, so first thing is you need an additional data structure. This is going to be kept in the process control block, the PCB. Okay, that's what I meant when I said long time back that the PCB keeps memory management information. What that does is actually this table. Okay, this table tells you where every page, this is an array, okay, it tells you where every page is mapped. So you basically, this mapping, these arrows are reflected in that page table. So you have this table that says P0 to F2 P1 F0. Okay, so this arrows basically show you that mapping. That's kept in the page table. Okay, so you basically index by the page number. Okay, that the, for there's one entry for each page, index by the page number, that gives you the frame number. Okay, so entry 0 is tell you where page 0 is stored. Entry 1 will tell you where page 1 is stored and so on. That's this table. Okay, so what you will do is the CPU, when it executes an instruction, will spit out a virtual address. Okay, virtual address has two components, a page number and an offset within the page. Okay, so you will take the page number and you will index into the page table. Okay, you will take the entry from the page table, which is F, and you will substitute that. Instead of the page, you get the frame. So you translated a page number and an offset to a frame number, a physical frame number and an offset within that frame. That's the physical location of that byte or word in RAM. Okay, this is actually done in hardware. This translation is done in hardware. We'll see how to do that, but this is essentially what it does. Okay, virtual addresses are two components now. Okay, so page number and an offset. You take the page number, you index into the page table, you get the frame number, you can obtain a frame number and an offset. And that basically points to that location in memory where that page frame is stored. Okay? Questions on this? Alright, so now I'll do some examples, but let me say something about the hardware. Okay, you can think of paging as a form of dynamic relocation. Okay, because essentially, instead of your base register that we had last time for dynamic relocation, you can think of these as a set of base registers. Okay, one for every page, stores the start address of every page essentially. Okay, so you are basically looking at the virtual address, finding the start and then substituting that in the physical address. Okay, that's essentially one way to think about paging hardware. The important thing is all of this thing, okay, all of this is invisible to the process. Okay? Process doesn't know about of the existence of page table. Process doesn't know about this translation. This is all happening transparently. Process is just issuing virtual addresses like before. Okay? From the virtual address, you actually derive the page number and an offset, and then all of this is done automatically for you. Okay? Now you don't need to do anything. Okay? Just see how to do that as well. So, let's now try to understand, given a page, a virtual address, how to extract the page number and an offset. Okay? So there is some simple arithmetic involved here. Okay, so we'll assume that page sizes and frame sizes are some multiples of 2. Okay, this is for ease of understanding, but I mean there is some interesting side implications on it. Okay, so you can essentially have a page that is 512 bytes or 1024 bytes. Most Intel architectures have 4096 byte pages, 4K pages. Okay, so we'll assume that. Okay, so this power of 2 makes the translation easier. Okay, so now what virtual address basically does? Okay, so if you have a virtual address space of size 2 to the power m bytes and a page size of 2 to the n bytes, okay, then what happens is basically the way the math works out, and I'll show you an example. The high order m minus n bits of this virtual address, this is an integer. Okay, virtual address is an integer. What you do is you take its binary representation, okay, and then you take the high order m minus n bits, that becomes the page number. You take the low order n bits, that basically become the offset within the page. Okay, yes, question.
Well, this is kind of a little bit off topic, but when we were doing stuff with assembly, like sometimes the memory got like too far away for like a single address, and it got like really convenient with paging like this. Could like one page and like a different page of like the same program be like a like really far apart on memory, make it like harder to access both of them, or is that sort of irrelevant?
In paging, it is not relevant because where the pages are stored is transparent to the process. Even at assembly level instruction, this should be transparent. You don't write assembly instruction saying load the value from this page and this offset. You just give an integer value, and all this is done automatically for you. So this should be completely transparent. Okay, and I'll show you one. Yes.
So the OS itself doesn't
really
see much of this.
The OS also will not see. This is all done in hardware. Okay. We'll see how binary arithmetic comes to our help. Okay, so I will do a simple example just to for you to understand where that m minus n and n bits came about. Okay, so let's do that example here. Okay, so instead of all this 2 to the power m and n, we'll just use real numbers. Okay, so we'll assume, let's say pages are 16 bytes in size. Okay. Let's take a process that's 2 pages long. Okay, it's going to go from 0 to 31. It starts from 0. Computer scientists don't count from 1. Okay, so anyway. So now, let's say you want to access virtual address, that's 615. Okay, because 16 byte process. So you want to do virtual address 17. Okay, so where is virtual address 17? Is it in for the 0th page or the first page? Okay, basically this is virtual address 0 through 15. Okay, so it's basically here. Okay, so the page number is 1. Okay. What is the offset within the page? Which byte of that page is it at? Is but so second byte, so since you start counting from 0, it is 1, 1. Okay. So virtual address 17 is page number 1, offset 1. Okay, basically this is page number 0, that's page number 1. This is the 16th byte, that's the 17th byte. Okay, that's address 17 is the 17th byte, which is accessing bytes within accessing bytes within memory. Okay. Is that clear? So, how do you get this arithmetically? Okay, so, what arithmetic are you going to do? So, you'll basically do division and mod. Okay? The page number is the virtual address divided by the page size. The page size is x. Okay? So, this is basically 17 over 16. That's 1. The offset is this mod x. Okay, so 17 mod 16 is that offset. Okay. So always if you divide the virtual address by the page size, you will find out which page it is in. Okay, if you have 16 byte pages and you always divide by 16, it tells you is it the 0th page, the first page, the second page and so on. And if you do the virtual address mod 16, it tells you which byte within that page does this virtual address reside in. Is that clear? Okay, so this is basically the arithmetic that the hardware has to do. Okay, so it has to do division and mod. Okay, but if you restrict the page size to be a power of 2, then you actually don't have to do division and mod. You can just look at the bits and figure out the page number and the offset within the page. Okay, so why is that? Let's try to understand. I'm going to erase some of this. Okay, so now let's say is the page size is a power of 2, 2 to the power 4, 16. Yes? Okay. What's the binary representation of 17? What did you say? Okay, so this is 0, 1, 2, 4. 17 is 16 plus 1. Okay? 16 is that bit, 1 is this bit. Okay, so we just add. This is a binary representation of 17. Okay, that's. So now, if you want to take the offset, so 2 to the power 4, so what you do is you basically take the low order 4 bits, that's your offset. The high order 4 bits of this address is your page number. Okay, because that's essentially what mod and division are doing for you. You divide by 16, you basically get this part of this integer. You do mod by 16, you get this part of an integer. Okay, so if you look at 0001, this is 1. Okay, that is your offset. If you do 0001, that's also 1, that's your page number. That's essentially what we did. 17 over 16, page number 1, 17 mod 16 is offset 1. Okay? So basically, because page numbers are restricted to be powers of 2, all you really need to do this division and mod is look at the low order bits, low order n bits. In fact, that automatically gives you the offset. Okay, that integer representation of that bits gives you the offset. The high order bits give you the page number. So you don't really need to do anything. If you just restrict the page numbers to be powers of 2, you just look at the bits and you just extract those bits and you get the page number and an offset. Okay, so all that the hardware really has to do is take the integer the binary representation, which is already the case, and you just extract the right bits and then you index and you're done. Okay, so it's not as bad as we don't really need to do a division and a mod operation to get this. Okay, you just look at the bits and figure it out. Okay? Alright, so now with that we are going to do an example. Okay, so this example doesn't require you to do bits, you can just do division and mod. But here is the scenario. This is RAM. Okay, there are 16 frames in RAM. Okay, there you go, F0 to F15. Okay, page size is 16 bytes, same as what I'd assumed here. Okay, in this that example. Okay, this is your process. It has 4 pages. A0 through A3. Okay. This is a table that shows where each page is stored. It says page 0 is stored at frame 2. Page 0 is here. Page 1 is stored at frame 6. Page 2 is stored at page 11. Page 3 at 9. Okay. That table is right there. It tells you the exact mapping. Okay. Size of memory 256 bytes. Page size 16 bytes. Everything is power of 2 here. Okay, so first question is how big can your page table be? In this case, page table is 4 bytes. But assume that you have arbitrary size processes. How big can the page table be? If the process had to fit in memory. Let me add that phrase. If the process were to all fit in memory, how large a process can you fit here? Yes. Yes. So the process can be as big as memory. You can have no more than 15 pages in a process. Okay? 16 pages. If you have 16 pages, I forgot my own. So 16 pages in the process means 16 entries in the page tables. Okay? So page table can have at most 16 entries, no more. Okay? If the process were to fit in memory. Okay? Then it basically says how many bits do you need for a physical address. Physical addresses go from what? 0 to 256 bytes. Okay, so how many bits do you need to address 256? 8 bits. Okay, 8 bits allow you to address from 0 to 255. So the addresses are how 8 bits long. So the address needs to go from integer 0 to 255. For that you need 8 bits. Okay? Okay. So now the next question is, given 8 bits addresses, how much is P and how much is D? How many bits is the page and how many bits do you use to get the offset? Okay, so this is actually not very difficult because a page is 16 bytes. Yes, so you need 4 bits to do that. Okay, to if you want to basically have offset that go from 0 to 15, it's the same example that I did there. Okay, so your offset can go at most from 0 to 15, you need 4 bits for that. Pages, page numbers can go from 0 to 16 also, you need another 4 bits. Okay? So essentially you have 8 bit addresses. The same as what you do here, this allows offset to go from 0 to 15 because you can have start from 0000 go to 1111, that is 0, that's 15. Okay, same with page number. Page number again needs to go from 0 to 15, so you start from 0000 go to 1111. Okay? So 4 bits for each. Okay? So what this says is you take any virtual address here, right? You take the low order 4 bits, get the offset, high order 4 bits, you get the page number. Okay, so now it's basically saying, given virtual address 24, do the virtual to physical translation. Okay, so now you have to go back and look at virtual address 24. So you can do this using any of the techniques we talked about. Okay, you can just figure this out just by looking at this picture. You can do the math mod or you can do binary arithmetic. It will all give the same solution. Okay? So let's do this visually. Okay? Where is the 24th byte of that process? Which page is it in? Assuming 16 byte pages. 24th byte. So it's going to be in the second page. First page holds 0 bytes 0 through 15. Second page holds bytes 16 to 31. So byte 24 is here, A1. Okay? Which frame is A1 mapped to? Okay, so you look at the page table and you say now it's 6. It's here. Okay? So that address is actually going to be in here, in this frame. Okay? Now you have to figure out which byte of that frame. Okay? So then you ask what's the offset for address 24 there? Which byte of that page is it in? Okay, so first one will have 0 to 15 and you said 8th, right? So it is 8th. So the next one will have 15 to 24. So you basically say that's the offset. So you basically go that offset within 6. Okay, so we'll just do the math here. Okay, so that's essentially what that is. Page 1, offset 8. Page 1 is mapped to frame 6. So frame 6, offset 8. This is the translation that you have to do. Okay? So, all of the solutions are there. How big is the page table? 16 entries. How many bytes for a virtual physical address? 8 bits. 4 for the page and 4 for the offset. Which part is P and which part is D? The high order bits are the page table. The low order 4 bits are the offset. And then that's the translation. Okay, if you look at the binary representation of 24, you will essentially get 1 from the high order bits and 8 from the low order bits. Okay, because 24 is essentially 16 plus 8. Okay, the binary representation is basically 0, 1. That's 8. No, that's not. Okay, that's basically the binary representation. Okay. So that's essentially where you get the address translation. Is that clear? We are going to do one more example. Okay, this one is a little more involved. Any questions on this? Okay, so the big difference here is we will assume that you can address memory not in byte increments but in word increment. Okay, typically you cannot address individual bytes of memory. If you have a 32-bit machine, for instance, you can address 4 bytes at a time. You can't go and address the third byte. You basically address 32 bits at a time. So your memory is basically fatter. Okay, your memory is not a linear sequence of bytes. It's a linear sequence of 32-bit chunks. Okay, so you can address 4 bytes at a time. That's essentially what this is. You can assume word-level addressing. The one word is same as one byte, you have byte-level addressing. If you're word-level addressing, then you address 4 bytes at any time. Okay. So now your addresses will have to be slightly different. They will be different from the way you address bytes. So now you are asked the same question, what is P and what is D? Given virtual address 13, do the translation, and then there is one more question which we haven't addressed. Okay, so let's ask the question, what's P and what's D? Okay, in the same example, okay, so you have 16 byte pages. How many words does a page have? To understand how many words it has, you need to ask what's the size of a word. What is the size of a word? Four bytes. One word is 4 bytes. If one word is 4 bytes and you are given a 16 byte page, how many words are in that page? 4. Okay. So that means addresses can go from 0 to 4. You cannot address individual bytes anymore. You can only address the first 4 bytes, the next 4 bytes, the third 4 bytes, or the last 4 bytes. Okay, so addresses can only go from 0 to 4. How many bits do you need to address 4 addresses? To go from 0 to 4, you need 2 bits. 0
to 3.
0 to 3, sorry. Yes. 2 bits. Okay, so in this case the offset is actually only 2 bits because you are doing word level addressing. If you did byte level addressing, the offset for the same example was 4 bits. If you did word level addressing, there are fewer addresses within a page, so you need fewer bits. Okay, so the only thing that has changed is D is now 2 bits. The number of pages is unchanged. You still have 16 pages, so you still need 4 bits for that. What has changed is how you address memory within a page. This is important to understand because typically on real machines, we don't address memory as individual bytes. Because if you have a 32-bit or 64-bit machine, your memory becomes broader. Okay, so essentially what happens is, the picture to keep in mind, so this is byte 0, byte 1, byte 2, and so on. This is byte level addressing. See, this is not what you actually have in real machine. In real machines you have fatter memory. So this is a 32-bit machine. You basically have word 0 is byte 0, byte 1, byte 2, byte 3. So you can address this entire word, okay, not individual components of the word. So the number of addresses becomes fewer, okay, because the same amount of memory is now fatter, so you basically address individual words. Okay, so you will need fewer bits because there are fewer addresses in a page. The reason there are fewer addresses is you cannot address more, you are doing more coarse grain addressing of memory. Okay, so this is something to keep in mind. It's something that trips you over if you do this without understanding the word size. Okay, so the last question there was okay, so this one I skipped, but you basically do the math, it comes out this way. What happens to needs to happen on a context switch? So in the context switch, now in addition to saving the state of the registers and so on, you need to save the page table. Okay, so the page table is typically a set of registers. Okay, we need to save that in the PCB. We need to load the new registers from the PCB into whatever registers you have kept for the page tables. Okay, so some extra work has to be done by the OS on a context switch. Saving the state of the current page table and whatever process is going to run next, you have to load its state. Yes, question.
Once the pages are loaded, do they not change locations at all?
Okay, question is, once the pages are loaded, do they not change location at all? in this form of paging, where there is no dynamics whatsoever, they are not going to change. Okay? But when we do demand paging, we are going to bring pages from disk whenever we want and throw them back to disk when we don't want them. In that scenario, page can be assigned any free location. So if the page was at some location, it went back to disk. If you reload it, it may come back to a new location. So there, the pages will keep moving in memory as they go to disk and come back. But here, we have not considered any dynamics. We load the process once and we are done. Yes.
So to what extent exactly, because you said earlier that paging was entirely transparent to the OS. So like, my own experience, Mac OS X, you can open a query monitor and just get all this information on the paging. How does that work?
Okay, so there is. So I said paging is entirely transparent to the process. Okay, and then the question is, when you actually look at any statistics the OS provide, you can see paging activity. So the word paging is overloaded. Okay, what we mean by paging here is basically the process whereby we chop up memory into pages and assign pages to frames. Okay, when you look at what is called paging activity, what that means is how many pages, that is actually demand paging. It's just saying how many pages have been fetched from disk into memory and how much have been evicted. Okay. So paging activity is basically the number of pages that have been loaded from disk into RAM over some period of time. Okay. So what you are seeing is how many pages are being fetched. That the OS needs to do. Because if it doesn't keep the whole process in memory, it needs to figure out which part of the process is in memory, which part is on disk. The moment you access a piece of this process that's on disk, it needs to fetch it back. So that part it is actually well in sort of control of. But this address translation, so when I say it's transparent, I meant is address translation. That is done in hardware. The OS doesn't need to go and do the division and so on to figure out this offset. You're just looking in hardware at the right bits and figuring things out. But the fact that you have to fetch pages and load them into memory, that the OS is involved in. Okay? So that's the difference in term. So we use the term paging for both. Okay. So now, having done all this, we are going to start looking at performance. Okay, you have another question.
Well, do modern operating systems use paging, or is it some other thing?
Okay, so modern operating systems use pages. Depends on the word modern, but any desktop server operating system, absolutely, you use paging. If you look at phone operating system, they are not yet in the paging world. They keep everything in RAM because they don't really have this notion. So it depends on how modern. If you think that modern means phone, then no. That means desktop. Yes. So all desktop operating systems, all server operating, anything you find, Windows, Linux, Mac, OS X, they all use paging because it allows you to give this illusion of infinite memory. When we do demand paging, we will see. There's no restriction on the size of a process. There's no restriction on how many processes you can create. I mean, there's a limit, but it's so large that you typically don't hit it. Okay? So the actual size of memory that you have and the actual size of processes that you have currently running will be very different. Okay, I think I've shown this long time back. I can show you again now that we have talked about memory. So this is the memory that's allocated to any process. That's called virtual memory. This is the amount of memory that is stored in pages that's currently in RAM. Okay, so you'll see that between this column and this column, there's a big difference. Okay, so you see this is a process that has 304 megabytes of virtual memory. Its size is 304, actual size is 304 megabytes. Okay, you see how much is actually in memory, 4.8 megabytes. Okay, so there's like 290 or maybe up to 300 megabytes is actually on disk at any given time. It is brought in when needed. So only a very tiny fraction of this process is resident in RAM. Okay, same is true for any of those processes. Okay, that's essentially the working set. The OS has to figure out what is the working set and only keeps the working set in memory. Then when we come back to demand paging, we'll revisit all of this. Okay, but we are going to have a discussion on performance. Okay, how bad is this scheme? How much slowdown are we going to see? Okay, so to understand that, we need to know where the page table is stored and how the translation happens. Okay, so there are three places to store the page table. Okay, first is registers. Okay, you can store all these page tables, things that this map in registers. Okay, advantage of keeping it in registers, very fast. Okay, registers is the fastest piece of memory you have on the machine. Disadvantage of doing this?
Slow.
say, limited by number of registers. Okay, if you have a page table with 1,000 entries, you better have 1,000 registers. Most architectures will not have that many. Okay, they may have 64 registers or 128. Okay, so if you keep it in registers, you better keep your page table small, otherwise it will not fit. Okay, you can now keep it in memory, saying maybe you want larger processes. Larger processes means bigger page table. Okay, so now the other place to keep it is you keep it in memory. Okay, now memory you don't have any space restriction, that's the advantage. Okay, I mean if you can easily keep 1 million entries, that will still be only some small number of bytes. Okay, disadvantage of storing it in memory is it's going to be slower than putting it in registers, because you have to access the page table in order to actually get to your memory. The performance is going to slow down. Okay, so let's try to understand what the performance slowdown is. Okay, so let's go back to this picture. Okay, so suppose this page table was actually stored in memory here. Okay, stored in the kernel address space. If you wanted to access, if some assembly instruction accesses a byte somewhere in RAM, how much performance slowdown are you going to see? Wild guesses, educated guesses.
Probably it'd be pretty quick.
Okay, how quick?
Pretty very quick.
Okay, so let's try to understand what we need to do. Okay, so we basically look at the address, you extract the page number. Okay, and then what do you have to do? You have to index the page table to find the frame number. If the page table is stored in memory, indexing this, just think of this as an array that you are indexing. Okay, if the page table is itself stored in RAM, to find out the frame number, you will have to do one memory access. Okay, then you find the frame number, and then you go and access that that place in memory. Okay, so what kind of slowdown is that? Sorry?
Double.
Double, yes. Every memory access results in two real memory accesses, one to look up the page table and another one to look up the actual address in memory. Okay, so you slowed down your performance by half. Okay, that's bad. We don't want half. We say you get whatever this 1000 something megahertz memory, what you're getting is half that performance when you run any benchmark. So you will say that this is not good. Okay, so we want to speed this up. So what do we do? Right, so if you stored it in registers, you wouldn't see this kind of slowdown. Register accesses are very significantly faster than memory accesses. So if the page table was stored in memory, the cost of memory access is cost of accessing a register, latency to access a register, plus the latency to access whatever memory region you are accessing. If you store it in, if the page table is in RAM, you basically have two memory accesses for every memory, real memory access. So that's not good. Okay, so what would we do? Any other thoughts? Any? So, okay, so we have to throw hardware at the problem. Okay, build some new hardware to solve this problem for us. Okay, this piece of hardware we'll call a TLB, translation look aside buffer. Okay, remember two classes ago I asked, have you done TLB in 201? People said no. I said we are going to look at it in detail. This is where we will look at it. Okay, so what do we do? Okay, so think of a TLB as a cache for the page table. So we will say page tables can be of arbitrary size. Processes can be really large. I just showed you a process that was 300 megabytes in size. Okay, you can have processes that are gigabytes in size. They may have tens of thousands of pages. So your page table needs to be that big to accommodate them. The only real place to keep this page table is in memory. Okay, because that's the only place where you have enough space to keep a page table. But if you store it in memory, you are in trouble. Okay, because you have slowed down your performance by half. We don't want that either. So what would we do? Okay, we go back to the 90-10 rule and we say, although this page table is in memory, at any given time this process is accessing only a small subset of those pages. Why not store those page table entries in a faster piece of memory or in a cache? And if that cache is faster than RAM, if you are accessing pages you already accessed before, you can actually look up the page table entries in that fast cache and be done with it. Okay, otherwise you will basically have to go to the RAM and then you will have slow access. Okay, so TLB is basically what is called a fast associative cache that stores frequently accessed page table entries. Not the entire page table, only some entries of the page table. Okay, because you don't have enough memory, enough fast memory to store the whole page table. Okay, your question.
What does TLB stand for?
Translation look aside buffer.
Okay.
So this is the picture now. It's getting a little more complicated. This is your page table. This is stored in memory. Okay. That's a TLB. Okay, in this case, looks like the TLB has as many entries as the page table. But typically this is going to be small. It may have 8 or whatever, what does it say in the previous layer, up to 200 or 2000 entries at most. Okay, start. So it is a, think of it as a small cache that stores some entries from the page table here. So what do? When we generate our page number and offset, we will look up the TLB, saying, do you already have this page table entry cached from here? This entry, is it already present here? Okay, you will look that up. Okay, if the answer is yes, you are done. This is much faster than going to memory. Okay? So you just look up the frame number and you get the frame number and you are done. Okay? But many times you will access page entries that have not been recently accessed. So you will get what is called a cache miss. This is how caching works. This is a cache. Okay? Typically in a cache is always towards a subset of the real data. Okay? If you have already accessed that data before, it's likely to be in a cache, you get what's called a cache hit and you are done. Okay, if you have not accessed that piece of data in recent time, okay, you are going to get a cache miss. Okay, if you get a TLB miss or a TLB cache miss, you will go to the page, you will be on the slow path. Okay, you will go to the page table, you will get that entry, you will put it in the TLB, and then you will also get the frame number. So next time you access this page, that page table entry is already in the TLB. Okay, you will have one time slowdown, but then you just fetch that into your fast cache. So if you access that page again, you are in luck this time. Yes.
These tables are all sorted, so finding information in them is really fast, right?
These tables?
Yeah.
So this is basically sorted sequentially. This one is not sorted. It's called associative memory. You store it wherever you want. Think of it as a hash map. That's what is called associative memory. It's what is called a key value lookup. Okay, it's a fast piece of memory where you give a key. It's almost like a hash function. Okay, it's not sorted, but it will actually find that key for you. So that's the key, that's the value. It doesn't have to be sorted. The hardware will actually do the equivalent of a search for you.
So you
will know immediately. That's what is called associative memory. That's how the hardware is built in hardware to do that. Okay, constant time lookups. Yes, question.
So what if instead of using this TLB for caching, you just put the page table itself in there? Wouldn't that then solve the problem of needing two memory lookups?
Okay, so question is, why not put the entire page table here? If you had enough entries, that would not be a problem. Okay, but the issue is always when you design faster memory, it's more expensive. Okay. So that's the same reason why you don't have 2000 registers to begin with. This is more expensive to put, it's faster memory. So you will always have a TLB because it's much faster than RAM. There will be a limited number of entries. Your process size grows beyond that, you will not be able to store all the entries. If you don't want to put a restriction on your process size, then it is always safer to have a page table that can be of arbitrary size that you store in RAM and some frequently accessed entries, the working set, is actually stored in the TLB. So most of the time you will basically get good performance because you will have TLB hits. Occasionally you will have bad performance because you have a TLB miss. Go to the page table, you fetch that entry in the TLB, and from that point on until you stop accessing this page, you will again have good performance. Okay, that's how this caching is going to work. Yes.
So the problem I'm seeing here is we follow this 90-10 rule, which means that, you know, we want to be caching 10% of our memory in the TLB, right?
Yes, something. You don't have to have exactly 10, but something like that. Yes.
But the page table should be less than 10% of the total memory, right? If we're using any reasonable number of pages. So,
if you follow the 90-10 rule exactly, you will have to argue that the TLB should be at least one tenth the size of your page table. Okay? Now, this is goes back to the hardware designer. Like, if you want to sell your processors for cheap, you will cut corners. This is what you will do. You will have smaller caches, smaller TLBs. This is how your performance will be bad. Okay, if you look at any processor family, you will see that the more expensive one have bigger caches, bigger TLBs. Not like they necessarily are faster processors, but you put more of these things. So that gives you the performance boost. Okay, so it all comes down to in hardware design time, how much are you going to charge your consumer, and based on that, how much memory and caches and all of these, not memory, but caches and so on, we put, yes.
That reminds me, it's kind of like a story, but it's relevant.
Okay.
But AMD released a CPU, and it was like a quad-core, really fancy CPU, but it had no cache, so it was dirt cheap.
Yeah, the performance will be very bad. You may think you have four cores, but if the cores are just sitting there stalling on memory, you're not going to get any speed out of it. So yes, I mean, in general, you would want to follow the 90-10 rule, but typically this TLB size may be determined by other factors. Okay, if you want a cheap processor, you will not put a whole lot of memory because it costs money to put them. Yes.
Is the TLB size kind of transparent to the operating system, so it'll just keep putting in values until it's full, or?
Right. So is the TLB size, so typically the OS, when your TLB miss, you can fetch this and you can throw out one entry there. Okay, the OS can do that level of management for you. But TLB lookups, it doesn't have to be in the path. This is a hardware thing, so you do a hardware level lookup. Okay, so you don't need to do anything there. Only one additional thing is there's a new column here, which if you are careful, you would see that the third column has appeared. There's a page number and frame number, but there's one more here. That's called the valid bit. Okay? So in the page table, the valid bit, or in the TLB, the valid bit says that the entry is up to date. Okay, so if the valid bit, we will come back to the valid bit when we do demand paging. Okay, so if, for instance, the page is not in memory, the valid bit will be set to 0, saying you don't have it in memory, it's on disk, go fetch it. You have what is called a page fault, which indicates paging activity. The same thing is true here. Okay, if something changes here, the frame changes here, then the entry there doesn't match what is in the page table. So then the valid bit has to be reset to make sure that both of those are in sync. Okay, so you use the valid bit to ensure that the entries in the TLB as well as the entries in the page table are always current and consistent. Okay, so let's come back now to performance and see what is the cost of memory access now. Okay. And we'll try to understand how much have we saved. Okay, so first question is, assuming there is no TLB, okay, so no TLB, what is the cost of memory access if the page table is in RAM? Okay, so we go back to the world where we didn't know about TLBs, and we ask, what's the cost of a memory access? We just did this 10 minutes ago, right? So what was it? We said twice. Okay? So the cost of, let's say, cost of accessing memory is M. What is called effective memory access is 2M. Okay? Every time you try to access memory, you pay twice the cost. Okay? So that we know. Okay? This we don't know. We are going to compute. Okay? What's the effective cost? Now you add in a TLB. Okay? Now what is the cost of memory access?
Call it effectively zero relative to the cost of
the
memory access in the memory itself?
We would like it to be, but let's quantify it more carefully. Okay, so we need to understand what happens when you access memory. Okay, you will do a page table lookup in the TLB. Okay, then one of two things will happen. Either the entry is there or it's not there. Okay, yes.
The first time you look up a page is going to be 2M.
Yes. First time you look up the page is going to be 2M. After you do that, it's going to be M plus TLB lookup time. Okay, you have one of two cases. Either it's a miss, in which case you pay the price of going to memory twice, or if it's a hit, that's the cost. Okay, yes, question.
So is there a certain amount of time that it can actually be in a TLB, or will it just kind of say if like you don't access it for a really long time, you have to re-access it.
Yes, if you don't access it for a really long time, the TLB may cache it out, saying that entry is not being used, I better use that entry for something else. So yeah, it's a cache.
So is there like a, does it say when the last time was accessed in the TLB, then the TLB handles?
Yes, so TLB has to do its own thing, but typically in any caching policy, you would have to do something like that. You will use a policy like least recently used, LRU and so on. When we come back to memory management, we look at this policy. These are called caching policy, or more accurately, cache replacement policy. If you want to bring something in, what do you throw out? The way you pick what you throw out is called cache replacement. But here we will assume the hardware does it for you, you don't control it. So, but let's come back to that question. What is the effective memory access time? So, sometimes it's M, sometimes it's M plus TLB. Let's just, so what is it overall on an average? Okay, we have one of these two cases, but we need to compute an average. How would we do that? Okay, to find an average, you have to say on an average how many times, how frequently does this case happen, and on an average how frequently does that case happen. Okay, and then you basically take the average across the two. How would we do that? Okay, you need to figure out what is the probability of a TLB hit. Okay, yes. Yeah, it will come, but I mean, we are just doing symbolic thing. But when you put in the numbers, you will actually see that it does come into play. Okay? So let's call P is the probability of a TLB hit. Okay? So with probability P, you are going to basically be on this, you are this access time. Okay? With probability 1 minus P, which is the probability of a miss, you will have that. Okay? And you sum the two. That gives you an average. Okay, this I presume if you have some knowledge of elementary probability, this is basically computing average using probabilities. Okay, because this with frequency P, with probability P you have this, 1 minus P you have that, so you take P times this and 1 minus P times this, you get effective memory access time. Okay, so essentially you have gone down from 2M to this. Okay, and now the answer that you are asking about the 90-10 rule, it depends on what P is, right? Your probability of a TLB hit is very low because you put in a bad TLB, this probability will be low, this will be this fraction will be high, you basically start approaching. In particular, if P is 0, which means there is never a hit, you are essentially back to this. If P is 1, okay, which means that you are very, you are perfect caching. Why you would have that, I don't know, but let's assume you have 1, or if P approaches 1, this term will approach 0. Okay, so you will basically get this. Okay, so if you have a good TLB mechanism where P is something like 0.9999 something, this term will be very small. The 1 minus that is very small, so this term will go down to 0 and you will basically start approaching this speed. Okay, so your memory performance will be good in the 90-10 rule. Because of the 90-10 rule, you essentially get very high probability values. Yeah, because once you fetch it in cache, it is very likely you will keep accessing that again and again for some period of time because of the 90-10 rule. Okay, so then the probability of seeing continuous hits goes up for those entries. So you will basically always be paying this price, not the high price. You will pay the low price. Okay, so your performance will basically not be as bad as if you had just stored the entire phase table in memory. Okay, so this is what you need to learn here. So that's 2MA, effective memory access time. Here this is MA is the memory access time, this TLB access time, then the probability of a hit plus this. Okay, you need that plus TLB entry here, which I did not put. Because first you look up the TLB, see that it's a miss, then you go to memory, fetch the entry, and then you go and access it. Okay, so that, so this is 2MA plus TLB. Okay, is that clear? So you need to understand how memory works and how probabilities work and so on. Okay, so as basically this says, as the TLB improves the hit ratio, this term will actually start approaching this because this side will be 0. Okay, because this part is 0, so this, or be close to 0, this is negligible. Okay, Okay, so you start approaching that, which is good performance. Because TLV speeds are high, so this is much smaller than this. So the performance slowdown is small. Okay, so we have 5 minutes. Okay, so I think we can actually skip this for next time. Let's do a minute paper. Okay, so it's been a while. So why don't you take a sheet of paper and write one thing that you liked about the class and one thing that you did not understand well that you would like to re-emphasize, like me to re-emphasize.